you're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums Must Hear Before You Die. For this episode, we'll be talking about Fugazi, a repeater. In the room, I have Rob.
It's Fugaz!
And Jeremy.
Come on.
And on the line, I have Ben.
I'm here.
And Kyle.
Baba Booey!
Repeater is the first full-length debut studio album by the American post-hardcore band Fugazi. It was released on April 19th, 1990. That's right, 1990. On Discord Records. And the
genre
is...
from the 90s.
Post-hardcore and garage rock. I'm going to read from the book, Tim Scott. If Minor Threat typified Ian McKay's youthful rage, then Fugazi's repeater balanced the idealism and sloganeering of his early suburban hardcore with an increasingly innovative and nuanced approach to anger. Sensing a move towards a more militant thug and jock mentality in the U.S. hardcore scene in the late 80s, McKay, a charismatic frontman of Minor Threat and co-founder of seminal Washington, D.C. label Discord, teamed up with former Rites of Spring guitarist Guy Picotte, Brian Cantley, and Joe Laley to form Fugazi. Repeater was the document to distance them from the scene's hardliners. Some detractors have often accused the band of preaching, but the naive politics of early albums were absent from Repeater. The difference came in tight rhythm section of Laley and Cantley, which had a lot more prominence in the production. On songs such as Sophisticated Fine and Repeater, the juxtaposition of feedback and crisp bass lines add to the urgency of McKay and Picotte's dual vocal attack. Greed sounds like it could come from a Gang of Four record. The anger and emotion was still there, only now it was delivered in a snide way, almost dub-like manner. The slower turnover, Blueprint, and Shut the Door are ballad-like. While their later work is almost art rock, in comparison, the band have never ventured from their punk rock roots and staunch DIY business ethics. Most of their shows are for all ages and less than $7. Repeater marks Fugazi's growth from angry young punks to challenging and innovative musicians. All right, what do we think of Fugazi, Repeater?
Well, I need to piggyback off what Ben was trying to say during your intro. It's 1990, guys! We did it! We're in another decade! We did it!
Kind of.
New decade!
Although this book got it wrong because it put 1989. So we have, after this record, we're going to have a bunch more
1989s. Why?
Oh, Robert Emery.
False start.
Yeah, someone messed up.
My balls, they're blue.
Anyway, Repeater is...
the cork one, back in that champagne.
I have to say, is probably one of my most listened to albums in high school.
Really?
Yeah, fantastic. I listened to it hundreds and hundreds of times. I knew every lyric, every note. I did have...
How did you get into it? How did you get into it?
Also curious.
Yeah, I had a friend who in high school who gave me In on the Kill Taker, which was their third album, and it was the same friend who had just given me, what was it?
Drugs.
Jet Set and No Star, probably. Sonic Youth. Yeah, Jet Set and No Star. And I was like, okay, this person knows something, and I'm just going to go with them, even if, you know, whatever they say, I'm going to kind of like lean in on that. And then we became very good friends.
Nice.
But I did misremember how clear, crisp, and like precise this album is. In my mind, it was like everything was like spot on a dime. And now in my, you know, having listened to hundreds of other records that are immaculate, this one is, you know, still rough and a little loose around the edges. But Still love it. And the playing, still great.
The playing's fantastic. On point. The
doesn't sound like a $600 record or something. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, the controlled feedback is astonishing.
Unbelievable. Ian McKay doesn't use any pedals.
None.
Nothing. Yeah. It's a Marshall and an SG, and that's
Really all you need.
What?
Yeah.
Ask Angus Young.
People just are like, how do you do this? How do you? And he can do things like he'll do the thing with screaming into the like feedback, get feedback. He'll, you know, move it in certain directions. He'll detune, but it's all just plugged in.
Yeah. Like
your mind right now is your eyes.
Like what?
As an aesthetic, he was like, nah, pedals.
Yeah. It's like, why?
I just want to see how much I can get how much tone I can get out of this.
I've seen them twice. Rig. I didn't even notice.
Yeah.
Right.
I love it. That's awesome. That's also Jam and Econo, except that Gibson and Marshalls are both expensive pieces of equipment.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Not if you buy relatively used speaking. In 1989 that's true. Or 1987.
Well, he wrangles some tones out of that situation.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He does some amazing shit with it.
Huh.
I don't understand exactly how the magic works, but I just know it works.
It makes me angry.
I know that it does. I like Kyle. My introduction to Fugazi was driving around with John Boggs, and he like on some playlist he was listening to had Waiting Room, and I was like,
oh, sure.
What is this? Wow, this is great. And he was like, it's Fugazi. I was like, oh, you mean those assholes that played across the street from the house that Kyle and I lived at? We were like, these people are dickheads. I don't want to go hang out with them.
Why are they letting kids in? Why are they charging so little?
No, we were fucking like 18 or 19. And
yeah,
like,
we were children.
The flyer was really cool. Like, it was like a fucking like cool revolver. Like,
I remember that in Bloomington. I remember that.
Sarah Sterk and Matt Chandler were the ones that were involved with bringing them through to the
that was the indie show.
Show?
Yep.
I went there.
Yeah. 71st.
And Hits Tour.
On 71st Street.
I was there.
We lived right across the street.
I was there.
Oh, I was there too.
Yeah. High five.
Yeah. Didn't go.
We were barely fresh.
Because Chandler's group opened. The big orchestra.
Yeah.
Was it Monster Zero Orchestra? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
How do I...
I don't know.
Remember that.
It was 1999.
I still have the gun. The ticket was the gun too. Yep. I have that.
Yeah. I remember seeing people with that gun ticket.
Yep.
I did not know who Fugazi was.
Didn't it go up a whole $2 for that? They went to $7 instead of $5.
It was like $7. Yeah.
People were like,
outrage. Is it the KFC? Outrage. Is that what the show was? The
Knights of Columbus. Across the street from our house.
Yeah, we should probably talk about their aesthetic of, tickets are usually, they were originally $5, but always. Obviously,
up to $7.
Up to $7 when they stopped touring in like 2002. They did not bring merch. That was just, they didn't see their band as like commercial band. They just sold, you know, records through their distro.
And that was, I think the cap for like a 12-inch was $8 in the day.
Eight, and then it moved to 10, I think was
you couldn't make them.
Yeah, yeah.
Right next to the song merchandise, I have a thing, I said, a thing Fugazi did not tour with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then.
This is not a Fugazi shirt.
Obviously, they wanted to do all ages shows. All the time.
Yeah.
Never signed to another label or major label. And it was just, I mean, in the book, Our Band Could Be Your Life, it was first the Minutemen and then Fugazi in terms of having like work ethic, not quote unquote selling out, you know, like just doing the band to have the band and have people appreciate your music, essentially.
They bought some hair clippers so they could like just like buzz their heads on the road just because that was the cheapest way to go. And they were all vegans. So they wouldn't just shop in the grocery store. They would shop in the back of the grocery store, but like the back of the grocery store to get the foods that they need.
How do you tour full time as a vegan in 89?
I think it was like, vegetarian.
Was it vegetarian?
Yeah. I think they were vegetarian.
I thought they were just like tofu satan.
In 89. There's no section of the grocery store even where you can just get some kind of plant protein.
Yeah, the corn had bacon in it.
It's been a minute since I've read the book. I thought it was vegan, which I was like,
no.
I was like, wow.
They said vegetarian, but even like Guy and Ian McKay were like, they didn't like to bring that up because they, you know, again, it's
like
where
assholes.
Yeah, well, when you talk about Fugazi, when you talk about Minor Threat, people are like, oh, they're a preachy band because they, you know, it's like
they had ideals.
They had ideals, you know, and they didn't want to.
They were ethical.
They wanted to do things their way, essentially. But
how dare they?
But yeah, they didn't want, you know, you didn't have to be vegetarian to like, you know, Fugazi. You didn't have to, you know, not drink to enjoy Minor Threat. It's just like what they were doing, what they were talking about, you know. So that does lead me to a funny thing about charging so little is that anybody with $5 would just come in the door.
Yep.
Who was bored that night. So they would sell out these places, you know, 1,000 people would be in the club, but not everyone was there to see Fugazi or even knew what was going on. Yeah. You know, they're playing all these, yeah, like AmVets and different clubs where they just had to make makeshift borrowed PAs and things like that.
100%.
They do rhinos.
They do rhinos.
Did they ever do rhinos?
Yes.
Okay. I think so. Yeah,
I think so. Ian would say that that made things magical, though, like not playing the clubs, because the people who would promote and put on the show were going to be so much more dedicated to getting them to come through.
100%.
They played a show in West Virginia. I can't remember the year. I was in my probably very early 20s, and it was a coffee shop, and it was one of the loudest things I've ever seen. And because it was not a big place, and there were probably 500-600 kids crammed in there, and the owner's son was at the time was a nightmare, and he was off his ass drunk, and he yelled something, the word faggot came out of his mouth, and Ian immediately said, somebody take him out of here, we don't, and this is like 98 seven. I was like, these guys rule, and like they took the kid out, threw him outside, and but his dad was an owner, so he snuck back in.
Yeah. They said that they had just envelopes with $5 bills to hand to people as they walked out the door. Yeah, or when they kicked him out. Yeah.
Because they gave him his five. Yeah, that's right in the middle of the set.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, the set started with Do You Like Me? And that's like my favorite. And I was just like, well.
Yeah, we haven't even started talking about the songs.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
I am forever, since learning about this band, I'm forever a McKay dude when it comes to like writing credits. I think that guy just has hooks for fucking days.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I like Guy's weirdness.
Yeah, no, it I know
it works perfectly together somehow.
I don't dislike it, any of it, but it's crazy just like how good Ian was at just at hooks.
Yeah.
Is this Blueprint right now?
Merchandise.
Okay.
Yeah. Thing for guys really, tour with.
I love the groove in this song. Like just the two guitars playing off each other.
Yeah.
It's just they're so good.
Really
their dual guitars are ridiculous. And everything throughout all of their stuff. And this is like hearing the beginning of it is really cool. You know, I've listened to this maybe once in the last year. When I do my annual Fugazi, listen to all their stuff in a row. And it always surprises me every single time. And I did a thing last time I did this where I listened to their most recent stuff and went backwards.
Yeah.
Because I got a better system. So I've been listening to my records a lot. Like their career makes sense playing the albums backwards too. Because they're
that's
just
awesome.
All different. I've never seen that with any band.
Yeah.
This is really cool.
What did you think, Kyle? First time listening.
It was really. We've talked about Minor Threat before, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, this Ian McKay guy. and I've seen this fucking album cover. Every time I've hung out with a cool friend, and looked at the records. I've seen fucking Repeater.
Yeah.
I'm very, very familiar with this, but I'm like, whatever.
You did the homework this week, though. What do you think?
Yeah, I listened to it over and over. It's fantastic. It's great. It sounds timeless.
We should have gotten that show, Kyle.
sure. It's incredible recording. The energy. It's so fun to hear the guitarists play off each other and the rhythm section just kind of doing their thing. Dogstar covered one of their songs.
What was that, Keanu's thing?
Yes, yeah. Keanu Reeves band. They covered Merchandise.
Amazing.
Once Dogstar covers a song that is eternally theirs. But I really did like their version of Merchandise.
The Dogstar version?
Such a good song. Fantastic. If you can't do the best, if you can't be Dogstar, you got to put on Repeater. This album's fantastic. It's like I read a lot of reviews comparing them to Gang of Four, and that's a band that I like a whole bunch.
Yeah.
Totally. This was just a band that I avoided because I didn't like their name. Fugazi doesn't mean anything to me.
No, well, it means something. It's Fugazi. It's Vietnam soldier slang. Fugazi, Fugazi. What's that? Fucked up, got ambushed, zippered in.
What?
Is that it? Because I thought it was originally spelled like S-Y. Fugazi. Maybe not.
People pronounced it different, but yeah, it just means a messed up situation. Ian just pulled it out of a book.
Yeah.
It was like a war book. Yeah.
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 Because Snafu Fubar.
Yeah.
He got it from Mark Baker's NAM, a compilation of stories of Vietnam War veterans, and slang for, fucked up, got ambushed, zipped in. And then like zipped in means into a body bag.
Oh, so that dude's Fugazi.
Yeah, he's Fugazi. Fucked up, got ambushed, zipped in.
Yeah.
This is also like much like Kyle, this is my first listen to Repeater. I've never owned any Fugazi. I feel like I've heard 13 songs enough working in kitchens and having roommates that had that album that I feel pretty familiar with 13 songs. But no, this is my first time listening to Repeater. I think I just took a different route to rock and roll that never crossed through Fugazi. I was never really that into hardcore.
Same.
So I never really discovered post-hardcore.
Yeah.
You know?
No, this reminds me of a lot of emo bands I remember playing with in like...
Totally.
99, 2000, 2001.
I mean, it's kind of how we avoided it, I think.
Gee was in Rites of Spring, which
I love them.
Essentially is the emo band.
Yeah, like people, emo hardcore kind of,
yeah,
right?
Emo core or whatever people say. I mean... People credit
crying
on stage and breaking all their equipment.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like they basically broke up because they broke all their equipment.
Yep. That album's good too. It's
wait, what are you guys talking about?
Rites of Spring.
Cried on stage, broke all their equipment.
Yes. Yep. And that was Gee's.
I'm gonna write that down.
Previous.
You guys know
band.
About Stravinsky's Rites of Spring, right?
Yes, it's a reference. Uh huh. To the 1913 Rites of Spring.
Very different material, similar outcome.
Yes, absolutely.
Stravinsky's Rites of Spring caused a riot and broken equipment. Yes.
Yeah. So the post-hardcore thing, I never really cared for hardcore because to me it all sounded the same. There are some things I like now, but you know, back in my 20s when I knew everything, it was boring to me, most of it.
Right.
Yeah.
But post-hardcore... And post-punk.
Yeah, that's where it gets fun.
I heard Mission of Burma, Gang of Four.
Yeah, good
blah,
bands.
Blah, blah, like that kind of stuff led me. Mm-hmm. And then Fugazi, and I can't think of another one, of course, because I'm speaking about it. But all these post-punk, post-hardcore bands were just like, Shudder to Think. Basically anything on Discord that wasn't straight up hardcore.
Mm. Nation of You Listen.
Just in my veins, man.
Yeah.
The Fall?
This week, too, a lot of... I was reading like their influences being dub and reggae, and I never ever put that together.
Killtakers with heavy dub.
Yeah, it is.
Actually, so Long Distance Runner is basically a dub song with a guitar part in it.
And I had just put Cantley and Laylee in this like box of just being like, oh, those guys just like the groove. Like they just have this, these, you know, bass and drums are just grooving in these different directions. But obviously, you know, looking it up this week, I was like, oh, of course. Yes. Well, dub influence.
If you half time, if you slowed these songs to half speed, his bass lines are straight up.
Yeah.
Reggae dub.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's really cool.
Yeah, that is so cool. Good.
And I mean, like I said, the most blatant I've heard it other than Kill Taker is Long Distance Runner at the end of Red Medicine. If you take away the part in the middle, it's dub. Yep. It's straight up dub.
Yeah.
And that makes me so happy because I ended up really loving dub because probably this band and early Bob Marley. That's probably what
absolutely. These
two things got me into it.
Yeah, a lot of people saw this as a continuation of the Gang of Four Solid Gold, that particular record.
Absolutely.
I can absolutely see that.
Uh-huh.
That album to this album or to 13 songs is like direct line.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Oh, yeah. Solid Gold's so good.
Yeah. Lyrics on this too get me. Like merchandise, never mind what's been selling, what you're buying.
Is the song merchandise about how they don't sell merchandise?
Yeah, I mean, it's not about them specifically. It's just about capitalism, commercialism of
fucking capitalism.
Yeah, man, the things that own the things you own end up owning you.
Yeah, I mean, they essentially said the same thing with you know, yeah,
with good thing I never bought a Fugazi shirt, or it would own me.
Oh man, I have a bootleg Fugazi shirt.
I'm too fat to wear my fucking bootleg Fugazi shirt.
My Fugazi.
Yours has who? What is it? Metallica. It's
the new lineup of Metallica.
Which one's yours?
It just has like the like new lineup of Metallica and just says Fugazi on top of it.
That's hilarious. Okay, mine's from an old. It's blue like bad font Fugazi in blue, and then it's just a black and white picture of an upside down bald Ian McKay in front of a drum set, and it's like. This is clearly not licensed merch.
The shirt that you would always see around the this is not a Fugazi shirt. Oh, yeah. This is not a Fugazi t-shirt. I would always see people wearing that. Is that really clever bootleg merch or is that really clever official merch? Either way, it works.
It's bootleg.
Okay.
Yeah, I think people wanted to, you know, support or like have a Fugazi shirt, but they couldn't figure out how to.
This is not a Fugazi
shirt. It's pretty brilliant. It's a brilliant bootleg shirt, I think, other than the one with Metallica.
Yeah. It's so good. Really good, guys.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It's great.
I think what gets me a lot, too, is the sort of like palm muting and then discordant chords. Those sort of like. When they go into those grooves and everyone's locked in, like it's locked in so tight with those, and then they just explode. There's something about that.
Fast, like the double time palm mute. Which like, I'm like, I never could get that right.
Yeah.
And it just like hearing it effortlessly done is just,
yeah.
So good.
Also, every song seems to have two or three parts that span in like a different direction that you're not even... not even seeing coming. It's crazy.
So we're in 1990. We're listening to post-hardcore. In 1990, listening to post-hardcore, are we listening to alternative?
We've been listening to alternative since Pixies.
Or since Dinosaur Jr.
And then probably the genre since people would be weird about it. And then, but like anybody who's like, I remember some kid asking me in high school if I liked alternative stuff like Pearl Jam. And I was like, I guess.
Yeah.
But like Pearl Jam and Fugazi are very far. But, you know, alternative was the umbrella. I think you would
find like at least Pearl Jam's 10 on a list of like best-selling alternative albums.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? Yeah, I mean, Eddie sure Vedder and Kurt Cobain both referenced Fugazi as being major influences like early on.
Yeah. Also, that was a signifier of sort of like respect. Respect your elders or respect people with the sort of like DIY aesthetic.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people commended them for doing that, going that way, but did not follow them down that path.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
So I think we are, you know, us collectively as friends, like always saw if... Even though you guys, you know, maybe didn't listen to a lot of Fugazi, our scene was created by people who
100%
were, you know, 100%. Looking at Fugazi as a way to do it yourself.
Yes.
You don't have to go to a label. Like, we can do it on a budget. Jamaicano.
Yep.
You know, it just, something about that band, just this band, just, you know, completely changed people's ideas about
this band could be your life.
Yeah. What it was to be in a band and to make music.
Do you have,
as an 18 or 19 year old in the early 2000s playing in bands, I feel like I had a Fugazi idealism without knowing I had a Fugazi idealism. Right. Yeah. It was just the, you know, like at the time I was unfamiliar, but not with the ethos, you know?
Right.
Do you have that that Fugazi chapter like pulled up in the book?
Yeah,
that one story about I think it was a show in Texas,
1990,
where the fire marshal shows up.
Yep, I can find it right now.
One of the best stories.
1990. Was it Fire Marshal Bill?
It was not Fire Marshal.
It was the same right time, right?
He was very active in 1990.
Yeah, it was. I was also going to find the quote just for you guys. Oh, one of my favorite quotes from This Band Could Be Your Life. "The power of no, man, that's the biggest bat we've ever wielded," said Gee. So just the ability to tell promoters, like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And tell every label, like, no.
Yep.
Nope. We're not doing any of this.
Also, cheers for Gee. Imagine
being wanted.
I know, being wanted so much.
What a feeling that must have been.
Yeah. They also toured, you know, without saying it's Ian McKay's new band, because they knew if they said that, everyone would just be like, "Oh, yep. Minor Threat Part 2," and show up and, you know, be very disappointed.
Boots and bracelets.
Yep. So they mm-hmm. kind of just, you know, did it on their own, but they get popular very fast.
Early suburban hardcore.
Yep. Repeater went on to sell 500,000 copies.
What?
Yep.
My God.
So pretty good for, you know, a band that is, you know, self-promoted.
That most people at work wouldn't know.
No one would, yeah.
But you got to be, like, at least a music nerd in a certain way. Or at least...
What's Ian McKay's role at Discord?
He does everything. He literally
co-founder. Doesn't he help do merch too?
He helped us merch.
I was just thinking about that while we were talking about them saying no to all these labels. Like, Ian McKay's got pretty good incentive as well to say no.
Sure.
Right now, he's the label owner. He's in control of the stuff. He does everything. It's more so than a band with the same ethos that's not also the owner of their own label.
Right. I mean, something about him too is there's some sort of, you know, work ethic, desire to help other bands. I mean, just reading through the book and their backstory, I mean, they gave to UNICEF, Planned Parenthood, like mm-hmm. every local DC community kitchens. Yep. I mean, it wasn't talk, you know, everything they could do, they were doing. He did roadie work for bands on Discord label. He would go out and just roadie
like
for people.
Like bands that couldn't afford a roadie, he would be like roadie me as label fear. Owner, I will hump your gear.
Yeah, yeah, he did. He would do That's driving. Awesome. He still does driving
what a
for
cool dude.
I guess, you know, when they were still a band, he would do all the driving for Fugazi.
Yep.
You know, like no matter what, it was like he was there doing it. Hmm. So
the other members of the band weren't driving shifts.
I think he liked it. That's the crazy thing.
He preferred the control.
He liked it. Yeah, he wanted
That's
to control
fair.
everything from A to Z.
Yeah, I'm just going to read this.
As a band member, I would let him have that control. I'd be like, eat your heart out, driver.
I'm asleep in the back.
I'm going to read this excerpt from the Fugazi. This is off of their repeater tour. Because they kept playing unconventional venues, touring never stopped being an adventure. In May of 1990, they played a Dallas warehouse that local punks had converted into a living space. In the ground floor's huge lobby, they had built a stage on top of a crumpled car they had dragged through the front door. The show was packed with about 800 people. Before the show, a street fight between two rival skinhead gangs, a Nazi white power outfit, and an anti-Nazi group who wore Star of David patches threatened to spill over into the show. To cool things down, McKay went out and met with the leaders of the two groups. One guy was wearing a Nazi uniform with a swagger stick, McKay recalls, and I swear he was wearing a monocle. McKay brokered a peace agreement, pointing out that the warehouse punks had been nice enough to put on a show and it wasn't right to make it into a battlefield. Finally, the first band went on, but then the police showed up and called the fire marshal, who obligingly pointed out various violations. For nearly an hour, Fugazi and the show's promoters made exit signs and put lights on them, taped off exit lanes, and cleared exit doors as the crowd grew increasingly restless. After all the work was completed, Fugazi was getting ready to take the stage. The fire marshal told McKay the place still wasn't up to code. A cop told McKay to tell the crowd the show was off, and McKay said, "I'm not going to tell them there's no show. You're going to pull the plug on us. You're going to have to tell them. You're trying to start some trouble with me," the cop said. "Sir, I'm not trying to start any trouble with you. I'm just telling you that if you're going to stop the show, you can tell them that you're stopping the show, because I have worked hard to make it happen."
That's very fair.
They discussed the situation more and finally reached a compromise. McKay got on stage and to a loud cheering announced that the police had decided to let them play. There was only one catch. The audience had to go outside. They closed off the street and we'll have the doors open. We'll play as loud as we can. We'll sing as hard as we can, McKay told the crowd. And after an initial uproar, everyone filed out onto the street and Fugazi played to an empty warehouse with the open doors blocked by a chain link fence. Between songs, he would run up and look at out of the chain link fence, making sure the police weren't hitting anybody. By this point, there was a raging bonfire in a vacant lot across the way, and hundreds of kids were dancing in the street and stage diving off of parked cars. That kind of stuff, McKay notes, is just not going to happen in a rock club.
That's the best punk rock story I've ever heard.
That's amazing.
It is.
I love it. It scratches all of my rock and roll itches.
They're the fucking coolest band, man.
That's ridiculous.
The fucking coolest band.
Oh man, I.
One other thing I want to pull out of the book. Cantley recalled, "The key to keeping a good place while you're on tour is to wash your own dishes. If you wash your own dishes, they'll ask you back a second time."
100%.
That is so wise.
Yes.
That's so wise.
Unless you're sleeping on those fucking horrible punk floors that we were sleeping on, and then they didn't care about dishes.
Yeah.
And you never wanted to go back there.
Yeah.
Unless the roommate comes home and disagrees with the person that said you could stay, and there are no smoothies and no back rubs, and you need to leave right then, no matter how sleepy and drunk you are.
Yeah, and you are so drunk, and the hangover is just creeping in. It's a six-hour drive.
It's such a bad hangover. It's the worst hangover.
Dude,
and you show up at the next show way early, because you had to leave in the middle of the night, and then you're just sitting in a hot car hungover.
Technically, yep. It was the early morning, not the middle of the night. The sun was up. We were just up that late.
We were promised smoothies.
We were also promised back rubs. Wow. Iowa City can go sit and spin, man.
Yep. And that was the first night we ever played Wizard Staff.
That is true.
Oh my God.
Most iconic lyric on Repeater comes from Merchandise, which Fugazi, in six simple words,
yes,
McKay laid out Fugazi's ethos in "You Are Not What You Own." That was it.
The things you own,
you.
What do we think?
Man,
I love it. I'm going to continue to come back.
Cool.
It's a really good rock record.
Great debut.
I'm going to say for myself, I wish I had spent the $7 to go across the street and see them when I lived in Indianapolis in 1999.
There's a little smidgen of hope because Laylee is now playing with Ian.
They've been playing in like various.
Yeah, but now they're playing together in a new formation since
bass and drums have a different band as well.
Yeah, I know. But I think
I've played with the drummer and the
Cantley.
Mesthetics. Played with them a couple of times.
Nice. Did they do Bear's Place?
No. When I played with them, we did
Waldron.
Bishop. Okay. And then did Z-Bar.
Cool.
But no. Nice. Yeah, this is fucking wonderful.
Yeah.
A+.
Hey, Can I share you guys a tidbit of information that might just like take away any cool points that I may have racked up among you or our listeners? Do you know what my introduction to Fugazi as a band was? The concept of Fugazi, what put that in my head was when Adam and his package covered Waiting Room.
Oh,
nice.
I love that. Yeah. I love that story. Yeah.
Adam
I love
and that story. His package brought me here.
Okay. I love it.
Okay. That's fine. However you get to, if you have to listen to Dogstar to get to Fugazi,
I don't care, go for it.
3-day weekend, man.
You lay down with a Dogstar, you wake up with Fugazi.
Somewhere in the middle of the night, you hang out with Adam in his package.
I have to ask Jeremy, being another Fugazi head or whatever we're called, what's your top? We're not going to get another one in this book. What would be your sort of like top album or what you think?
My favorite, and I think possibly the weirdest, is Red Medicine.
Yeah, it is.
It's just, it starts with the junk noise. It goes into my favorite, one of their songs, which is Do You Like Me? It's got that weird Joe song where he's like, it's drop D heavy by you. And then it gets like, it's got some of their fastest, gnarliest, like that.
Yeah.
Like, and then it ends with Long Distance Runner, which is my other favorite.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's so weird.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'd heard Waiting Room. I'd heard, what are some of the like smash hits that you'd always hear at like punk places?
Dude,
Suggestion.
Okay.
I'd heard like the 5 or 6 songs that everybody's like, yeah, it's on the mixtape. But then like, I got Red Medicine and I don't even know if somebody just was like, here, I don't want this. And I was just like, done.
Yeah.
This is the greatest thing. And they got all their stuff and followed them from then on. And
yeah.
Like, that's a tough one, dude.
No, totally. Yeah, they're all good. I would say Red
getting weirder.
Yeah, Red Medicine for me was a really powerful one. Like, I used to listen to that one all the time. And In Hits, it was like right, those two came out like in 95, 98, which were like formative for me.
Yeah,
but I will say that like Repeater is the one I've definitely heard the most, just from, you know, being in high school and being like, I have, you know, however many albums you just listen to them constantly.
This is the tape I have.
Yeah,
I just can't, exactly. I can't not like when I put them on, whichever era it is. And then, although, I mean, I love The Argument.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, they're just good musicians who do weird things together and it works.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Yeah. I will say too, if you're interested in like a, probably the most artistic documentary band retrospective instrument, Fugazi's instrument is a collaboration with Jim Cohen, who does all their artwork and does a lot of their, you know, I don't know what you would say.
I have that on DVD for sure.
But he does, he was filming them from the beginning.
Yeah.
So all those weird shows that, you know, they're playing for convicts, they're playing at a youth rec center or something like that. They're disaster moments. You'll see just as much as their most magnificent like performances.
Well, there's that kid outside. He's like, so cool. My car, man, you know, Black Flag.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh no.
Yeah.
It wasn't in Black
Flag. That's the other Häagen-Dazs guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the manager at the Häagen-Dazs.
But it's,
I was just Scooper at the Häagen-Dazs.
It's like filmed like a Criterion art film.
Oh, it's so
like
good.
It has, so it is, you're not going to have like immediate, it's very cinematic and very poetic in its approach to, you know.
It's so good.
And you wouldn't expect anything less from a band like this. Cool. What are we doing next? All right, next time we'll be talking about Soul to Soul Club Classics Volume 1. All right, thanks y'all.